If you'd like to join the If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Well, good evening and welcome to The Rational Revolution. I am Chris Elfheim, and my hope for you is that you join us and you participate on the app as well as social media and let us know what you think. I am here with my friend, guest host for the night, Mr. Dean Rash. Tell everybody how you're doing.
I'm doing great. How about just short and sweet on that one?
Does that work for you? Yeah, that really works really well in a radio format. I'm great. I'm fine.
Yeah.
What are you, a 16-year-old boy?
Not anymore. Got the mind of a 12-year-old, though.
I know it. Our goal on the Rational Revolution is to bring about civilized dialogue. Our goal is not to necessarily solve the world's problems. Our goal is not to insist on being right. Our goal is to have a conversation, just like you would at home, not having all the answers, but being willing to speak and to listen to one another, and maybe we gain a little bit of insight as to why we feel that way in order to try and create a revolution of rational thinking. Again, it's a shame we need a revolution, but I think we do.
I think you always have to be open to the concept of a revolution.
Absolutely.
Especially in the world that we live in today.
Absolutely. So tonight, and actually we have Dean with us this week and next week. This week, our entire focus is going to be on local issues, bigger issues inside of local issues. And next week, we're going to take that same philosophy and talk about state issues. Again, looking at both sides and trying to find some commonality where we can. So let's talk about the local issues. Dean, you are an alderperson, have been for 10 years on the De Pere City Council.
Correct.
I've been for, I believe, three and a half on the Appleton City Council. So from your perspective, and again, there's really nothing off the table on this. What do you see as the biggest challenge in your community that you continue to struggle with?
Well, I think like any municipality, our biggest struggles always come around to budget stuff. Mm. I think everything revolves around that in some sense or another. But I would say some of our challenges are, the topics that have come up quite a bit really are going to be looking at economic development, balancing that with housing needs, balancing that with infrastructure. I sit on public works, so we're always talking about projects.
Me too.
You know, and that's some of the most exciting stuff. I know Eric, who's our city engineer, when he comes up with all these new engineering guidelines and things that we have to pay attention to, it's about 500 pages long. Mm-hmm. And he always jokes that I can read through it line by line for you guys tonight so you can approve it. Or I'm like, nah, we're good. Mm. Because there's so much stuff in there that has to keep us compliant, whether it's DNR, state law, federal law, county ordinances, whatever it might be. But I think our biggest issues revolve around continuing to grow our communities, keeping them safe, keeping budgets. You know, I like everybody else, opened up my tax bill yesterday or the other day, and even though I knew what was coming, I still wasn't happy to see it. It was still a surprise, you know, because it's still going up. But I think those are always the big topics we worry about.
Right.
At the end of the day, we want to make our communities places that people choose to live in.
Right.
And that they can live there, they can work there, they can play there, they can raise their families there.
Yeah.
And how do we best do that?
Last week, when Emily was on the show, we talked about, you know, the value of getting involved in local town board, county board, city council. And we talked about the fact that most people know very little truly about how any of these organizations work. Mm-hmm. I know it was the truth for me. I'm a fairly astute person. Nope. Mm-hmm. I had no idea the volume of the dynamics that are going on. So when we say, you know, we're irritated about our tax bill, well, yeah. Anytime, first, we have to put out a dollar, it's going to irritate us.
Right.
And if that dollar turns into a buck and a quarter, we're still irritated. So that's just human nature. But understanding how much goes into trying to do what's best for a community, especially when you have communities themselves that don't necessarily acknowledge where all the issues exist or have a focus on what they believe the issue is, and that's the most important thing. So give me an example of that in your city.
Well, I'll give you one I just had tonight. I was reading through my city emails and had a person send me a picture of somebody who's redoing some landscaping. They tore out their front yard. They're redoing the whole thing, and they've got dirt all over the place, across the sidewalk, across the whole thing. He just sends me a picture of it and says, how can this be code? And I'm thinking to myself, because it's not done yet, you know? So it's sometimes it's people just not understanding the process to get projects done.
Yeah.
That they jump to conclusions, and then you spend some time and effort, not a lot. Many times it resolves pretty quickly to say, hey, you know, this isn't completed yet. It will be completed and back to normal like it's supposed to be. Same thing with our Shopko project right now, the Shopko building coming down. I had a lady send me a message, very nice message. You know, she told me I was her favorite alder person because she watches this on TV all the time. I'm like, well, okay, you buttered me up. We're good. What can I help you with? And she just talked about how they blocked off that one block section in front of Shopko, and it created a travel inconvenience for her, and she didn't like that. But I just responded back and I said, we have to do that for safety because the building's coming down. We can't have people walking around in there, squatting in there, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
We've got to keep it safe. So
it is amazing how we'll get calls. I remember last winter I received a call from someone who I want to say walks their dog in the community. And we had had a storm that seemed to have lasted for 2.5 days. And she was very disappointed that the city crew had not gotten to a segment of sidewalk or crosswalk that she used. And you know, there are codes, there are rules that everybody has to follow that says from this point, there's an X amount of time that we will have everything cleared. But the reality is that we all want what we want. People walking by on the road. We all want what we want when we want it. And we tend to not have a lot of patience. And when you start balancing that with, we also don't want our taxes to go up. Mm-hmm. The easy answer is, I can get it done faster. Just give me another 100,000 and I'll put another body on the streets. Can't do that.
No.
You know? No. It doesn't work that way. And I think that, again, this balancing idea, this also plays into other aspects. You know, we could talk about public safety. I don't know anybody that doesn't want to live in a safe community, and I am very respectful of the efforts. In fact, I think that our law enforcement many times doesn't get, I don't know, the recognition for the fact that they are often victims of what's going on in society, right? They're the ones that are having to deal with more and more, whether it be disturbances, domestic disturbances, whether it be gun violence, whether it be drug overdoses. You know, there's so much more that we're aware of that's going on, and our police force and our fire departments and our EMTs are all facing that. So I'm very, very respectful of all things, but we still have to find a compromise in how do we cause good within the realm that we have. We had 3 committee meetings on Monday. And there's a very full discussion going on about whether we should increase the amount of cameras that we have that help us identify across the country. It's wonderful technology. It allows the entire United States to communicate via driver's license. Via license plate. So we got a bad guy crossing from North Dakota heading our direction. It is absolutely a valid tool in preventing the next set of violence that takes place. We're very popular
these people
tonight.
People walking by and
we're
and,
very
and
popular. Anyway, so you know, then we have to balance because the answer is we had created a budget that allowed for, I believe, 19 of the 29 cameras, and there was a resolution that put out saying, "Hey, let's take the step and get the remaining 10." And so it was a very long discussion on it. And then the question is, how do you fund it? Because we already did our budget. So then the suggestion was to pull it from remaining ARPA funds, pull it from remaining ARPA funds that were under the category of mental health, community well-being, and violent crime prevention. That was the suggestion. And it was a very, very beefy discussion. Very beefy discussion. And my question in that had to do with, All right, so the whole point of us having the safety officers and the technology and all the tools we have is to deal with the crime that exists. And
in your community.
In your community.
Yeah, right.
And do our best to prevent more, right? I think we all agree with that.
Right.
But I have a challenge in the idea of taking $125,000, which is what they needed, and taking it out of the pot that actually would be used in the community dealing with mental health, dealing with drug abuse, and just putting it towards the monitoring or the capture of. You see my yeah. issue with that?
Yeah, and I agree with that.
It's difficult because at some point in time, the question is, if we have a crime issue, is the answer to get a larger and larger stick or more and more sticks? Or do we somehow at some point in time transition into dealing with the root of the problem, which is why we have crime? Why? What's going on in our society, in our communities? This is not somewhere, someplace. This is your backyard and this is my backyard. And these are still all of our communities in the Fox Valley are really quite safe, and the proportion of violent crime is low compared to the rest of the country. It doesn't feel like that when there is a incident involving a gun 3 blocks from your house or in front of your driveway. That brings that issue very close. So I think that more and more we're going to have to start dealing with on a local level. The idea of there's only so many dollars to spend. Do we start putting money or continue or bolster the money we put on the base root of the problem to try and reduce those levels before it gets to the point of needing the police and the monitoring?
Yeah, and I would say, I bet you most people in our communities are shocked at the amount of stuff that's going on behind the scenes.
I think so, too. I think that the lack of awareness, again, people don't pay attention until something happens within 3 blocks. But then when it does happen, they scream and they're mad and they think the world is coming to an end. Well, that's not true either.
Right.
But we have to realize that we are, as we get bigger and better, we are going to deal with more things. Mm-hmm. And what's the root of it? And how do we actually add value? And do we believe that investing our tax dollars in solutions as opposed to monitoring and penalizing makes sense? We're heading into our first break. This is Chris Elf. I'm with the Rational Revolution. I have Mr. Dean Rash with us, my red friend from the De Pere City Council. We're just doing our best to have a conversation. Feel free to text us in on the Civic Media app. We look forward to having the conversation. Come on back on the backside.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. This is Chris Elfheim, and who is that, Boston? Oh, bringing it back around. I love it. So Dean and I are having a great conversation here about local issues. Dean from the De Pere City Council, me from the Appleton City Council. And what we're trying to do is try and talk about these issues that our cities are dealing with and how it's affecting you and your kitchen table. We left off in the conversation talking about trying to balance public safety with potentially public prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And where do we put our dollars for the best bang for the buck? So I'll let you take up from that conversation.
Yeah, so in the points that you brought up in the last segment, I think there's a lot of good stuff that happens in our communities. Our public safety, as we were saying, ADP and PDP.
ADP, PDP.
Or just PDs.
We're just going with public safety.
Yeah, so our public safety, they do a great job of keeping a lot of that stuff at bay from the general citizenry. I've had the opportunity to witness at least the De Pere Police Department in action a couple of times with people that were having some sort of an episode. And the amount of empathy and caring and conversation that they had with those individuals, they spent as much time as they needed to. In one incident, I was actually at the gym that I work out at, and they were outside, and they were with her for about 30 minutes before I got to the gym, and they were with her until about the time I was leaving from the gym.
Yeah.
And at no point did they rush it through, did they do anything, but they helped her get through a situation she was having.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the kind of stuff that we don't always get to see, how great a job that they do. And there's, you know, for not putting fear into people, but there are things going on in our communities that our police are taking care of before we ever have to hear about it or see it. And that's a great thing.
It is. Absolutely. I think that, again, most of us are oblivious to anything other than what looks like our backyard.
Correct.
It just is. And that's a shame, because we don't then know the true reality of what the entire community is facing or is dealing with from within. Right.
Yep, yep.
So I think that as we have these conversations, we want to make sure that we're looking at things you and I had said, talked about on the break, how our police departments themselves have really changed. They continue to have a harder and harder job, in my opinion.
Right.
And with the rise in mental health issues, I think that we're finding that a lot of the calls that the police departments are making are dealing with mental issues.
Right. And I think one of the things we both talked about is both of our communities hired social workers.
Yeah.
And the social worker, you know, ours, John in DePere, is phenomenal. And he shares with us statistics every year, which we'll be getting probably in the beginning of January again. But the amount of interventions that he has and the amount of resources that he pulls together from all areas, mm-hmm. not just at the city level, but it could be, you know, a violent, like a domestic violence center. It could be helping, you know, a father who lost his wife and he's trying to raise three kids, how to help him get services to help him with mm-hmm. grieving. Just anything like this that can help make the community stronger, more supportive for the people that live there.
Yeah. Crisis management, I think that's what we referred ours to. And I think initially we did a pilot with Outagamie County, and the success of having a crisis management professional on site at these events has been tremendously, and this is coming from within, tremendously successful in not only de-escalating many cases, but also helping with those on the force mm-hmm. and what they see. One of the things that I really like, we have a service dog.
So do we. We have one for the fire and police.
You know, and let's just think about that. I mean, again, we're talking about our police department, but we are literally staffing crisis intervention people for both those in the community and in the force, and a therapy dog to help all of those involved, whether they be the victims or the police force, whoever, anything we can do to help calm the chaos of that situation, we're right. doing. So I think when we start looking at, and again, people have a tendency to be big believers in public safety or big supporters of community engagement. And I think what we're trying to get at is that both have value. And I think that if we can talk about the fact that our police forces are acknowledging the fact that mental health specialists are tremendous resources to them personally and in the public, then we have to realize the value of adding mental health resources into our community. And again, as we look at in Appleton's situation, you got $125,000. Where are we best spending that money?
Right.
And where's the balance? Because you can't have it all on one side or all on the other, or we're just going to continue to repeat what the situation is.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes, like in the situation you talked about earlier with the community cameras that are nationwide, they communicate nationwide, sometimes we get forced into those situations as well, where we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. We have to pull the money from someplace because of we went through the situation in DePere over the past few years where we had a group of people that were getting together at Voyager Park and hanging out until all hours of night, underage drinking, squealing tires, the whole bit, harassing other people walking the trail. So we had to go out and purchase cameras to put up there.
Yeah.
We had a portable one up there, and I went down there one night just to drive through and see what was going on. And they're all sitting on the portable camera hanging out. And it took us a long time to move that crowd along, but they were disrupting the city and costing us money and harassing citizens.
Yeah.
And we had to spend money on something that we weren't budgeting for because we weren't expecting something right. like this to happen.
Yeah. And what people don't realize is putting up a camera, I mean, again, it seems like when there's an issue, there always seems to be an easy fix. We'll just put up a camera.
Oh, we had police sitting there too.
You can't. I mean, we have resources. Jones Park is very similar for us. We'll have the same issue because it's down in this nice little hollow and the cars tend to go down there and I get all kinds of calls all the time. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we have cameras there, but guess what we don't have?
People.
Anyone monitoring the cameras.
Yeah, we had to put police on staff.
Right.
Sitting in the parking lot watching them.
Right.
Try to do some community intervention, get to know them.
It's a community intervention has been, I think that's also something people don't realize about how hard the APD works and DePere, I'm sure.
Right.
There is a tremendous amount of community engagement. We have an issue with cars and noise as everybody else does. And we've made some changes, but the effort for years were there in going to these car groups in having a conversation about what we can and can't do, try to give them an outlet. I know personally that the APD is not trying to go out there and fine everyone.
Correct.
They're trying to give people an alternative. But what ends up happening is if we have to go to the policing route where we are now trying to put presence down there, and as we do that, that just means that's one more or two more patrol officers that are not on the road looking out for the other stuff. Right. So, so it's a difficult balance of who do we watch out for? What's a nuisance? What's dangerous? And try to cover it all while trying to maintain a decent tax bill, which is never acceptable no matter what.
No matter what you do.
No matter what.
It's not good enough. Yeah.
Right. So there's got to be some urgent patience. Mm-hmm. And I know that's an oxymoron, but being urgently patient allows us to realize there are issues. We can make changes and we want them quick, but we can't always make that happen. I can hear Janis Joplin. I love this song. We are heading into our second break. Again, Rational Revolution here with Conrad on the board. That's Conrad with a K, rocking the hoodie tonight. And Mr. Dean Rash, come on back on the backside of the break.
Thomas holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose.
If you'd like to join the Rational Revolution and engage, download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. Choose your station, WGBW or WISS, and click on the text button in the lower right-hand corner. Looking at today's issues through a politically purple lens, this is the Rational Revolution. And once again, here's Chris Elfheim.
Welcome back from the break. Hey, by the way, do you know that UW Badger volleyball is on tonight? There you are.
There we go. Yes, I do. 8:30.
8:30. Yes, we're going to get home in time.
We are.
I love Badger volleyball. I love it.
I am telling you, I don't know if this is right or wrong or embarrassing or whatever it is, but Sarah Franklin.
Yes.
I need an autographed jersey of hers because she is phenomenal.
She is
the GOAT.
I love it. If you have not taken the opportunity to watch the Badger women volleyball, what you're missing out on is a high action, mm-hmm. positive environment.
Mm-hmm.
Every point is celebrated, whether it's won or lost. Tremendous athletes, tremendously well-run organization, and it's
absolutely
fun.
Yep.
It is fun to watch. I have introduced as many people as possible to Badger women's volleyball, and we are in, is this the semifinals?
Or yep.
The semifinals tonight?
I think we play Texas tonight.
Yeah, NCAA national tournament's going on. So if you don't have the opportunity to have Mr. Schwaba on, maybe listen in one ear and keep a half an eye out on the Badger girls volleyball.
Yeah, they're phenomenal athletes.
Absolutely. All right, so we're heading into this segment, and I am giving the reins. This has never happened before. I'm giving the reins to Dean to bring up the next topic. Look at me.
You know, and I really do appreciate that. And with all honesty, I'm going to do the best I can. I don't want to disappoint. So as we talked a little bit in the break, I think one of the other things, because from a city standpoint, there's so many things that affect our budgets and so many things that we have to focus on. And we're starting to come into winter,
mm-hmm.
you know, and one of the topics that comes up, and I think you talked about it just briefly, is the snow removal.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an expectation that citizens will remove the snow and ice from their sidewalks, primarily their sidewalk. You want to leave it in your driveway, go ahead. Nobody's walking there. But in the sidewalks, you have 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do that in 48 hours, is the city driving around and looking for those places and then shoveling them and charging you? Absolutely not. I think most communities like De Pere, like Appleton, it's all complaint driven. Now, I'm not telling people to go out and complain when you see snow on the sidewalk, but it's normally complaint driven. Yeah. But the whole purpose of it is to keep people safe. And I would actually suggest to somebody, if you do see snow on somebody's sidewalk that hasn't been shoveled yet, knock on their door and see how they're doing.
Yeah.
They might be on vacation. They might have, I mean, I had a gentleman that actually had torn a rotator cuff and couldn't shovel. So we got some people to help him out. But I mean, those are the kind of things we do as human beings with our neighbors, is help them out. I mean, it's not always what it seems to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the complaint, and in winter's coming, and I am blessed to have a spouse who enjoys blowing snow and shoveling. So she is known to be out in these storms, and she will do the whole block. She will take care of people. And so I would challenge, if you have a 16-year-old or a spouse or somebody who enjoys running that equipment, be kind. Go ahead out there and stretch it out. From the complaint standpoint in the city, I think that goes not just for snow, which is coming up to
goes
us.
For anything.
But it goes for anything. I was in a community meeting earlier this summer that had to do with Lawrence University. And they own a lot of properties, and just like any organization, they struggle with budgets and what you can and can't do. They're no different than anybody else. But the neighborhood was very upset that they are not keeping up their buildings, you know, paint chipping and that type of stuff. And what's sad to me is that no one had ever called. There weren't any calls that said, hey, aren't there codes on paint? It doesn't really matter who owns the property. There's a code to follow. And once that complaint is made, the city has an obligation to then have a process. And again, that process is lenient, in my opinion. It gives every homeowner, whether it's a university, whether it's a business or a person, plenty of time to comply.
It does.
But they will give that. They will do that. So there's no fences. Somebody has a fence that's too tall. The city isn't going to know about that. We don't have the manpower to drive around and police little statutes.
All our ordinances and rules. And,
right.
But in a fence standpoint, they should have pulled a building permit for that. And it should have complied with the plans prior to them putting it. So if they put it in there without approval and without a building permit, then it's a different issue.
But. Right. And then, you know, we can go to, I do actually want to shout out to Jim in Appleton. He had sent in a text, and you know what, Jim, you're a loyal listener, and so I want to make sure you know we're paying attention to you. Jim had sent in regarding our conversation in the last break. He says, I live two short blocks from City Park. Obviously, he's from Appleton. Three long blocks from Peabody Park. In my neighborhood, I have the rare privilege of being in a multiracial neighborhood. Personally, I love it. On the rare occasions that police are needed, my experience is it largely depends on who shows up. I've experienced officers that are calm and take their time trying to get to the bottom of what is going on. I've also seen officers who escalate the problem instead. I prefer the calm approach better.
I think we all do. Yeah.
And I think it's fair to say that I don't care whether you're a police officer or a fireman or a mental health specialist or a teacher. We are not perfect individuals, and I think some have a skill set that are more so one way or the other. But I think it's important to say that the caring approach, I think, is always going to be necessary. It's just sometimes easier said than done. Mm-hmm. And when you add on the stress of we don't know what's all going on that night, it's, you know, so again, there's no excuses to be made. I think it's a valid point. I like the fact that there's been witness to it and that he appreciates it. So thank you, Jim, for chiming in on that.
Yeah, and I agree with Jim. I think we all appreciate that side of it, but I also want to give support to the officers when they do have to escalate because it's their judgment call.
And that's, you know what,
again. That's the hard part. We're not there.
No. Even on the opportunity to do a ride-along, and we've spent a lot of time on the APD, but I think it's okay. I think that understanding how all this stuff blends together. On a ride along, it's unbelievable what you learn is all involved. And honestly, the amount of paperwork, to be honest, and what takes time away from doing what I think the community thinks they should be doing and how they should be doing it. Again, there's only so many dollars.
Yep.
and we're trying to cover large areas. And going back to the conversation about the complaints on loitering in a park or here and there, again, I don't think anybody realizes how few patrol cars are really on the street on right. any given evening.
I don't think they do either.
No. And then you add in the fact if violence is involved in any way, then there will be two of those patrol cars minimum at that scene.
If not more.
So if you have, literally a half dozen, if there's a half dozen squads on duty and two of them or three of them are pulled away for one call, that one call may take hours, mm-hmm. hours. So again, now why didn't they respond to the six cars in that park that were noisy? It isn't because they didn't want to.
Right.
So is the solution then let's, just put on three more patrol cars? We can't.
Yeah. And I think from our community anyway, I'm sure Appleton does the same thing, but when those situations happen, where all of our officers are responding, or the majority of them are, the other communities in the area are aware of what's going on and are stepping up to help in our yeah. communities as well.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of cooperation that happens with neighboring communities to help in those types of situations. There is a ton of coordination behind the scenes that we never hear about.
There really is. In fact, going back to the camera conversation,
yeah.
We had to tour the Outagamie County, and Appleton bought a big technology. I don't know what the right way thing to call it, but it's like a big Winnebago that has all the, it's like a rolling command center. I think that's the right way to do it.
That'd be right.
And it's technology. It's the cameras, it's everything, the drones. But I learned in that conversation that in Appleton, all the surrounding communities were helping each other by pointing directions towards one another. Mm-hmm. So it's not they come in and it's a surprise to us. We were working with each other to utilize these camera programs to be beneficial to the entire valley. And back to your point, if we've got something going on in Appleton, Outagamie County may lean in and help out. So, tremendous respect for what everyone in the municipal world does to try and be efficient, to try and be helpful. Everything that we do, all while maintaining the budget, which will, I wish I had a magic wand.
It's amazing how well we do with our budgets, but I know there's a lot of stuff that gets scrapped every year.
Yeah.
We have pages and pages and pages of requests for whether it's new equipment, whether it's projects, whether it's something for parks, whether it's something for health that don't make the budget every year.
Yeah.
And every year we still supply a level of service to the community that is far and above what sometimes is even expected by the community.
Absolutely.
So we, for the city of De Pere, we actually have amazing staff all around. They just can figure it out and make it happen.
It's amazing. You talk about public works, municipal services is our committee. And I got to tell you, holy cow. Municipal services is a massive department.
Yep.
Every road, every sidewalk, every drop of water, every building, it is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
The what is actually managed in a city. Again, De Pere, what's your population in De Pere?
We're about 25,000-26,000, somewhere in that range.
Yes. Yeah,
so a little bit smaller than Appleton.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. We're like three times bigger. Or at least twice as big.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it's a lot.
We're not measuring sticks here, are we? Who's bigger? Who's
Appleton is bigger.
Well,
you can look it up. Look it up. Anyway, but again, big is awesome.
Yep.
I think one of the challenges that we deal with in today's world is whether we are accepting the fact that we are turning into a city. We are not small towns anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We are cities, and cities are complex, and we want that. Appleton, Green Bay, all of these communities, we are destinations on this entire side of the state. And so we want that, we enjoy that, but with that comes more stuff to manage. And parking is an issue. We talked about weather earlier. In Appleton right now, we're talking about the potential of going to overnight parking, which we do not have right now. There's no overnight parking from, I want to say, 2 a.m. until 5 a.m., something like that.
Yep, we don't either.
But we are in a compact, the downtown community, we are tight. You know, our density in terms of body to square inch is high. And it poses trouble. You've got single lane driveways and one car garages, and you've got a mom, a dad, and two teenagers. Where are those cars going to park? So now you have the rule that says don't park overnight. Okay. Well, that means that every now and then somebody's going to call up and say, hey, that dude's been parking on that road every night. And then somebody shows up and gives them a ticket. But there's 17 other roads that have cars every single night, and nobody got a ticket because there's no complaint about it.
Right.
So is the solution we write more tickets? Is the solution we ask people not to live there? Or is the solution to find the next version of our rules, which is going to allow for that? So we're talking about it. We're not ready decision-wise, but we're talking about the alternate side of the street rules. And then from there, you have to say, well, that doesn't sound like a bad idea, but how does that impact snow removal?
Right.
How does that impact
garbage pickup,
leaf collection?
Yep.
All of that. Oh, Appleton is 74,511 De Pere's. Oh, did I not say three times?
I don't remember.
You don't recall?
Really, really great memory, just really super short.
Thank you, whoever texted that in. It might have been Conrad. It might have been a caller. I don't care. Good job.
But they left themselves anonymous so that I couldn't whine about it.
Facts stand on themselves.
That's true. Very much so true.
Anyway, so the point is, it's not as easy as saying, well, I need more place to park. We have to work it out.
Right.
And anytime we cause a change, there has to be thorough thought into the positive and negative results that come from that. Listen, we are heading into our final break of the evening. It is 7:48. I have the fabulous, the red, the pretty much rational Dean. It's in the name.
Except for my facts Dean, on city size.
Dean Rash Rational. At least he does. He's close to that. We enjoy being here with you. Hope you're enjoying our conversation about city issues. Come on back on the backside of the break.
Don't you know that you can count me out? You know it's gonna be all right. All right.
All right. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. This is Chris Alphon. Thanks for joining us on our Thursday night conversations with Mr. Dean Rash with us. We've been talking about parking, and we're going to stay in that vein for just a little bit. I will say in Appleton, we had a conversation on a committee this last week. There was a resolution to do a study and find out, you know, can we parking? We have a parking utility. And so in Appleton, again, three times bigger. In Appleton, we have three parking ramps. And maintaining them and having them accessible to the public, owned by the community, is a challenge, right? So our government's job is not to make money. Any local government,
we can't.
Right? Yeah. Our job is to provide the services, bring in the revenue to cover it. It's supposed to be, in essence, a net neutral,
right?
So the idea was brought up on investigating, and there are ideas out there, and some communities have actually sold off their parking lots and privatized, which you'll hear privatization quite a bit, usually from the red side, which you can understand why that conversation would come up.
Yeah.
But I think that there are some dangers. Again, we talk about the positive and the negative that come from any conversation. And what are the negatives of giving up that control of a facility that is meant to be revenue neutral in order to make a few bucks, save a few bucks, and ditch that onto a private enterprise? And I will tell you, as the alder who represents 50% of the downtown businesses on College Avenue, no. Because if I were to buy a parking ramp as a business, I'm a pretty savvy business lady, I'm not in business to run revenue neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. That's not what business is about. It has to be profitable, or why would you do it? So the danger in that is having the two different entities, the concept of one is to provide value to the community and the businesses therein, And one is to offload it so it's not an expense or a drag. But then you deal with the fact that you cannot assure anybody that those prices would not adjust to make it a profitable business. And you wouldn't even be able to, you wouldn't even be able to argue with the business owner.
No.
Because it's a business.
Right. And they have to have that right to do that to make money. That's
right.
That's why they're in that business. But
right.
When we go back to the parking side of it, we don't have a parking utility.
Yeah.
And we've actually voted it down a couple of times and are finding that there might be some state violation to having one.
Hmm.
And we don't fully understand it yet.
Yeah.
But the parking utility is an interesting concept. That so far the state hasn't necessarily said yay or nay one way or the other, but in our investigation right now, we're staying away from it. But I will say our, you know, parking is always a tough topic and because our businesses want parking near their businesses for customers, but in our city streets, people want it because they've got boats, campers, multiple cars, things like mm-hmm. that. But the services have to get out there to plow.
Yeah.
They have to get out there to pick up garbage, you know, sweep the streets, that kind of stuff. And I know these aren't sexy topics to be talking about. And I'm assuming the show is doing really well because the most texting we've had in a long time. but I will say, I think one of the things that can have maybe a really big impact on our communities in the very near future, if it can go through, is looking at rail service that comes all the way up to Green Bay and all the way down to Milwaukee, Chicago.
Okay, now just hold there. I want the audience to take a big, deep breath in and know you're not dreaming.
Correct.
This is a Republican who just said it might be a good, in fact, it is a good idea to bring up rail service. So go ahead, Dean, favorite red person of the day.
So this is a red person
mm-hmm.
that has also lived in Europe and been the beneficiary of good rail service, who has been on the East Coast quite a bit and been the beneficiary of rail service as well as Chicago area and riding the rails down there. I think in the past, the concept of rail, was fought quite a bit on the Republican side because it was only a short line basically from Milwaukee to Madison. But the bulk of our community, bulk of our state's, industry and citizenry lives between Chicago and Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
That corridor all the way down through Fond du Lac, I think that's a great concept for rail service.
Yeah.
So I've never been opposed to rail. I was opposed to some of the concepts of rail that were floated before, but I think rail has a place for us in this state. But I think it's got to be put into the right areas, and this corridor is the right area.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that when this came around the first time, I'm pretty sure I still lived in central Wisconsin, and I thought, geez, that's a lot of money and it's not going to affect me. So why would I want that?
90 miles of rail for whatever billions it was.
Right. Yeah. And I think that there still is that mentality for those who don't come to the valley. I think that still is out there. And I think that we owe it to the state to really, really spend some time on the value and how that actually can help. The rail system, you know, and again, this is step one. Step one would be to use the existing lines that mm-hmm. are there,
right.
Which means it's not high speed rail, but it is indeed rail.
Passenger transport.
Yep. You can get from point A to point B to point C. And I think there's great value in there. I love Chicago. I enjoy taking my family to Chicago. There's a lot of people that won't go to Chicago because of the traffic. And yet you really should expose your family to things different and, you know, from the rest of us.
Right.
So I think that connecting communities, making the world a little bit smaller is good overall for everyone from a cultural standpoint. Anything we can do to make that easier. Is there an economic value to it? Absolutely. Yeah. I think there is. I would love there to be a connection to Madison. I mean, because Madison is not a quick trip from here. It's annoying. It's, you know, in some cases dangerous, you know, the whole 26 connection. So I think we can talk more about it. I love that there are more minds open to it today than there have been in the past. And I hope that we can have some good conversations moving forward on that.
If you think about the rail and how it plays into some of the explosion of Uber and Lyft, it makes it that much easier to use rail today than it did.
Right.
10, 15, 20 years ago. Because you're not worried
about parking your car or something like
that. You've got a way to get from A to B from the rail station.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love the rail station. I love jumping in Chicago and just going wherever.
Yeah.
And the whole parking thing is interesting, and we're running out of time, but the idea that we must park right in front of a business in order to have good parking. Nope.
Yeah.
Because walking three blocks is a short walk. That's what the rest of the world is aware of.
You know, that walk of three blocks is from the center part of a Walmart parking lot to the milk back in the back of the store. Honest to God, we did the measurement.
It's
like
true.
3 to 4 blocks
it's
to get
true.
There.
We will not die if we have
no,
to park
3 weeks
away. Try out a parking ramp. It's cheaper. Your car's covered and you can get anywhere you want to go.
Your legs are not falling off.
Listen, this has been the Rational Revolution. We haven't had a good time. Mr. Dean Rash is here with me, and we're going to do it again next week. We're going to talk more about state issues and how it impacts us. Please hang in there for Mr. Pete Schwaba and Nightlife. He's coming up after us. And don't forget, with one eye, watch those Badger volleyball.
Go Badgers.
Go Badgers. Thanks for being here. We'll see you again next week. Thanks, everybody.